we are back, folks. It is 9:08 on a Thursday morning here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the Suburban Chevrolet Make the Choice studios, and every Thursday, you ought to know by now, we do the MGO Blog Roundtable, where we talk about a range of topics, and this is the deepest into the offseason that we've gone, so we kind of veer more away from football, although with Nick Saban kind of crying a little bit about satellite camps, we can talk about that today. Joining us, as he does every week, from MGO Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, good morning.
Morning.
To my right and to Brian's left, Craig Ross, the venerable.
Ross,
yes.
Old.
Nah.
Experienced. Veteran. Yeah. Let's come up with a better word than old. And, of course, Ed Fang, he of great analytics and also of Power Rank. Ed, how are you doing?
I'm great, Sam. How are you?
What's going on with you these days?
Nothing much. I actually did want to talk about a fundraiser that I'm doing with my son's school. Mm-hmm. Sam and Ira have been kind enough to allow us to auction off a spot on the MGO Blog Roundtable. So if you've ever wanted to
Why was that their call?
What? I guess we should have asked you too.
Yeah,
huh, Brian?
Maybe. Yeah.
Brian, can we auction off a spot on the radio?
No, absolutely not.
Brian is proving once again he's the Uncle Fester of sports talk radio.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know.
I was just going to call him Scrooge.
So if you are out there and you want to tell Brian Cook what he should think about Michigan football, this is your chance. It's going to a great cause. All this goes to financial aid for Summers Knoll, which is a progressive educational school that my son Eli goes to in kindergarten. It's a great cause. We're bundling a bunch of other stuff. You'll get a copy of Brian's football preview, Sam's football preview, Craig Ross's books. Get a copy of Three and Out from John Bacon. So there's lots of goodies in there. There's a link pinned to my Twitter account. Hopefully Iroh will tweet out the link too. I originally thought you actually had to go to the fundraiser on Saturday night. That is not true. You can sit at home in your underwear and get on the internet and bid for this on-air appearance.
Why in your underwear?
I think he was looking at Brian, because if anyone's ever gone to Brian's house and knocked on the door, he answers the door in his underwear.
Hey, he usually waits. And yeah, like,
there's a pause where I put my pants on.
I know, that's true. That's true.
That's like, you just have to be patient if you come to my house. Because I have the privilege of working at home, and that like just changes so many things about your life.
Well, Lawrence Ferlinghetti said even the Pope wears underwear.
Why are you telling everyone that the guy works in his underwear all day?
No, I didn't. I just said if you were at home, and at home you can be in underwear
on the
internet.
That's on Craig.
Oh, that's yeah.
Craig's the one looking the other direction.
Right?
We should also point out, I did retweet the link that Ed was talking about.
Thanks.
But, you know, when you ask Ed what's going on, what's he up to lately, he doesn't sell the fact that he was just in the Detroit News.
Oh, well, thank you.
What
yeah,
did you do in the Detroit News?
Well, I actually have a regular column on the Tigers now. So I do, I think, every other week until football season starts. I'll be writing there and then once a month after. But I'm just trying to bring a numbers-based perspective to the Tigers. So this week I talked a little bit about cluster luck and how, despite the fact that the Tigers are off to a pretty hot start, let's forget about last night, that they've been unlucky in some ways. So we looked at that, and I think that's a kind of a newish concept that I'm trying to bring more into the baseball analytics.
And cluster luck is?
Oh, so cluster luck is a sequencing of hits. So the simple example, if you get 9 singles in a game and you cluster them into one inning, you're going to score about 7 runs, and you're lauded for clutch hitting. Otherwise, the other extreme is if you get 1 single in every inning, so you'll score 0 runs, and the opposing pitcher mm-hmm. gets complimented for scattering hits.
Hey, a whip of 1 is pretty good.
Well, exactly, but these are two different cases where you have the same whip, and you have vastly different results in runs scored. And some of my research shows that these are two outlier examples. So on average, if you get for every 2 hits you get, you'll score about a run. Yeah. And so you can look at that to evaluate how teams are doing in the luck department.
You know, Bill James, I think, proved many years ago that those things are essentially random and that clutch hitting doesn't exist.
Yeah.
No such thing as clutch hitting.
And people have been yelling at him ever since. Mm-hmm. Whip is actually my favorite fantasy baseball stat because people get so mad about it, and then you explain it to them.
You're a fantasy guy? I don't know you're a fantasy guy.
I'm not a fantasy guy. Oh. I'm just like, but like Whip is just, and they're like, Vorp and Whip and Pakota, all these fancy stats. And you're like, Whip is Walks plus hits divided by innings pitched. Right. And they're like, ERA wins. And then you punch him in the face. But you don't, because that's not, you shouldn't do that.
And, you know, Ed's not going to like this, but I, look, I have nothing.
This is the exact, like, preface to how he talks about soccer. It's like, I have nothing, it's fine. I hate all of it permanently.
Hey, war. Hey, you know what? I understand that these are meaningful statistics, meaningful
measures.
I actually
personally don't like WHIP very much.
You know?
No.
All right. Well,
but
it's a good, like, base metric.
But kind of the ability to prevent hits once a ball in play is not really much of a skill on the pitcher's part, so that's why that can be a little bit deceiving. So Shane Green has a great WHIP right now, but it's unsustainable because he's allowing I think 19% of hits of batted balls in play to go in, where the average is 30%.
It may not be as unsustainable as you think, because the fielding that the Tigers have now, I mean, Iglesias might be the best fielding shortstop in baseball.
I think the Tigers' defense is amazing, but his batting average on balls in plays will not be 188 for the rest of the year.
That's true.
And since I've lost a couple bets to you in a row, Sam, if you want to wager on that, I can get back in it a little bit here.
No, that was a sucker's bet that you took. I'm not gonna.
Well, I got a sucker one, and then that there was a dumb one, and then there was one that I would do again.
I agree. And, I mean, the guy's gonna give up more than one run the rest of the year. No one expected him to do as well as he's doing thus far, but he's going to be much more. He's going to be. My question was, could he be Rick Porcello? I think he's going to be with what we've seen thus far. So
yeah, I mean, I think I like the movement on his pitches, like from what I've watched, and he does have the potential. But like you said, don't expect one run every three starts for the remainder. Of the
especially
season.
When your ace goes out and gets bombed last night. If he can get bombed like that, anyone. Anyone can. It's 9:15 on a Thursday morning here on the Michigan Insider. So a few different topics. Let's start off first with the Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, segment on Jim Harbaugh. Have you guys watched it yet?
I have, yes. Nobody else did?
I didn't watch it.
What did you think?
I thought it was okay. The bit at the end where Gumbel's like, yeah, everybody's going to go back to the NFL, right? It was kind of like, you got to be kidding me. But that's just the attitude out there, where there's some people who are like, the only reason that anyone would ever go back to college is because they can't get an NFL job, which is not the case with Jim Harbaugh. And, they just had this segment about how weird the guy is. And he's like throwing the ball at the strip mall next to my house. And I'm like, does he do this now? Could I go out there and just see him? Like, are there bleachers that I could just watch him play a baseball game against himself in? And then, Boone, he's an OSU guy. So
that was my take, too.
I mean, I don't know that is the main thing, but when he talks about how they got over the mountain, so stop pushing, it's like, you didn't.
Yeah, what mountain did you
get
over?
You got very close to the mountain.
I don't know if he has multiple personality disorder or what, but this is the same guy that was like Jim Harbaugh's champion. He was like, he's the best guy. He's like my brother, and don't mess with Jim or you got to go through me. And then just last month, he recommended the high school coach at his high school you want to go work for Jim. And Jim, we're just alike. You want to work with this guy. So he's pumping Sam, Jim up, pumping Michigan up.
So if you said to get to Jim, you got to go through me. Apparently Alex went through himself to get to Jim.
I'm trying to figure out what's going on with the guy. I mean, he's just done a complete 180. It seems, on Jim Harbaugh.
He did have a couple quotes in the end there that were highly complimentary. And I don't know if he was talking out of both sides of his mouth because that's the way the interview got set up, and then they cut him so he looked like a jerk. I mean, I feel that kind of happened because he's saying completely diametrically opposite things. And if you heard the entire conversation, it might be a little bit more balanced.
And look, I'm not – to me, I wasn't – frankly, I wasn't taking issue with anything that he said on the merits, because there are players that feel that. Hey, even Jim Harbaugh said in the segment, hey, I wear on people. I wear out my welcome. So he knows it. It was just this guy saying it because he was a guy that was on the total opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I think that everybody's focusing just on that segment. When overall, I think it was a very positive piece about Harbaugh, where you got to see him kind of be a person and, like, the weird loneliness that he's had to live through his entire life because he is Jim Harbaugh, where nobody wants to play with him.
Do you guys agree with the sentiment that's out there that, hey, he might just to say this is outstanding, he might just work out better in college, which is saying something because he took a team to the Super Bowl.
No, I think that the idea that a college kid is going to be more willing to put up with the kind of Jim Harbaugh stuff because you're still trying to get somewhere. You know, and there's a definite end point on your tenure. So it's just like, all right, we're just going to do this for one more year and then I'm going to go play in the NFL. And, you know, I think there's that great video of Harbaugh at the Sugar Bowl. Was it the Sugar Bowl or is it the Orange Bowl against Virginia Tech? Where they've just got all this stuff on the sideline with him. And, you know, you have all that sideline stuff they did at the NFL. And you know, he...
Wait, what sideline stuff are you...
I mean, they just have these tapes of him interacting with a football game from the sideline as a head coach.
Okay.
And he's terrific. Like, he's involved in the game. He's... like, there's this great moment where Tyrod Taylor throws this crazy touchdown. And he's screaming at the refs, he's out of bounds, he's out of bounds, he's out of bounds. And Taylor asks him, was I in bounds? He's like, yeah, you were in bounds. And it's on Vimeo. I would it's been on the site a lot, but if you haven't seen it, I Google Harbaugh Orange Bowl Vimeo and it'll come up. And the demeanor he has when he is on the sideline during a game is terrific. He's involved, he's encouraging, you know, he's passionate. I think that's the most important thing is that when you are in those 3.5 hours, you know, he's the guy you want leading your team.
Getting to those 3.5 hours for some
exactly.
People.
but so, for anyway. And Boone did have a good point where it's like, you know, college kids aren't going to be able to be like, hey, man, you're pissing me off. Uh-huh. Like, I think that he is better suited. And this is something we were talking about during the coaching search, where this is a guy who seems like a college guy.
You know, I just feel like, and I've said this 1,000 times, don't mean to be a broken record, I think that, you know, different styles work, and it's about having the personnel that is suited to responding to your style.
Yeah.
And so, you know, these guys, they go out and recruit the guys that fit, and he's shown that once he gets, anyway, he's taken over other teams' guys and done well, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But, you know, certainly as time goes on, they get better, and I think there's reason to believe that's going to be the case here. So, you know, time will tell, of course, and I'm sure there are going to be some players that it's inevitable. There are going to be some players that go on and say, hey, he pissed me off, I didn't like him. You know, that happens.
Yeah, but Lloyd Carr has those players. It happens to everybody. I mean, you interact with hundreds of guys. Some of them aren't going to.
Well, some guys it gets embellished though when it happens. Like, hey, we know a guy that was in here that got embellished with. So, but my point is, just be prepared for that and move past it. It's not going to be a big deal. It's 9:22 on a Thursday. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the official voice of Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Brian Cook, Ed Fang, Craig Ross in studio. So, guys, there's also news. I guess we can stick with football for a moment. So Nick Saban is upset with the competitive disadvantage that the SEC,
which is hilarious,
is now at because of satellite camps. I mean, you know, Dabo Sweeney said, hey, we know what this is. These are combines. These aren't really camps. These schools going all across the country.
Yeah, no S, Sherlock. I mean.
Yeah, like they're sussing out some sort of secret thing where Michigan is – trying to get football recruits, like, oh, you caught me red-handed.
I guess I'm just a little confused by what disadvantage are they at now? Is somehow Clemson about to move out of South Carolina? Alabama's not going to be in South Carolina.
Is Clemson going to stop having kids on Instagram flashing thousands of dollars? Probably not.
Well, can we put this in perspective real quick? Because we talked about
Clemson
last year.
Clemson complaining is the worst. Because Clemson is the most like, we just pay you team in the country. And they get nothing out of it. They
Ole Miss
get nothing
too.
Out of
Ole Miss
it.
Too. Yeah,
I haven't heard Ole Miss complain.
Yeah, no. But Ole Miss isn't complaining. They're like, whatever. You guys can have your satellite camera. We're just going to give the best kids their $1,000.
And we're going to be here
and
anyway.
I'm not necessarily opposed to it. Just don't complain about it.
That gets back to the same point, though. These schools aren't moving out of their location, so they're going to be closer to the kids. There's going to be no sort of ramifications for the extracurriculars that we see go on, be it oversigning or maybe cash changing hands.
Saban can do his satellite camp up in Sioux Falls. That's what he wants to do, let him go.
He threatened that. These guys don't want us up in their territory.
It's a self-imposed rule, right? Yeah. This is an SEC rule, so it seems simple enough to get that changed if it's really a big deal.
What SEC rule?
It's an SEC rule that the SEC teams can't do satellite camps.
Yeah, well, the SEC should have a rule that you can't sign 35 guys a year.
Right, exactly.
Don't be coming up here saying that. There's something wrong.
I think it's good that people are complaining about what Michigan's doing.
We talked about this last year.
Anytime we can piss off Nick Saban, I'm on board.
I agree.
We talked about how James Franklin was doing this last year. I think it was about one year ago today. And my response was like,
They said they're going to do five of them now and maybe more.
Right.
So
PSU. And my response was like, if Michigan doesn't do this within a year, that's a big problem. So, and we're doing it.
And you guys talk about disadvantages, and it, obviously in a joking way, this goes back to my suggestion from earlier. Band together. You'll have two sides of this argument. The coaches that don't like the satellite camps, they can go try to bring NCAA legislation to ban satellite camps, and I'd be on the other side of the argument saying, we'll introduce NCAA legislation that will mandate numbers of on your roster and how many kids you can sign, not conference by conference. Right. So you can turn into a bargaining chip if you have to. So maybe it actually can limit some of the oversigning if you need something as a bargaining chip.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – I think it's a fact that you know, there's a higher density of high-quality football players in the South, and that's just a fact. And so, I mean, there's obviously schools in the North that want to take advantage of that.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
Well, if you're the SEC, you're like, but these are our players.
They're not your players. They're in high school.
Well, you know,
you got to work a little bit harder to keep them, but you still have the advantage.
You're right there.
You live right next door to them. Michigan has to go home. You're at home already. You're right next door to them, so you still have the advantage. They get everything. Like I said, they look the other way when they're extra. I'm calling them extracurriculars, money changing hands and oversigning. You're near the highest density of good players. Hey, bowl games are mostly in the South, right? They have all of these advantages. The one time people from outside of the region get a little bit of little bitty piece of the pie, they have a problem with it.
Well,
and what pie at this point? I mean, this is just an idea.
Well, hell hath no fury like a football coach who's mildly irritated.
Yeah, they have the monopoly on advantage, and they don't want to relinquish any of it. So, you know, good for Jim Harbaugh, good for James Franklin, and even Urban Meyer said, I don't like it, but we're going to have to do it.
It'll be banned by next year.
Maybe Nick.
Guarantee.
I agree with you. But maybe Nick Saban will be on the MGO blog roundtable. Maybe he'll win Ed's auction. He can
come on up, coach.
He has the disposable income, but probably not the inclination.
There you go. Probably not. That would be fun.
It would be. It would be. You know what else is going to be fun? Watching Michigan basketball next year.
Absolutely.
Caris LeVert, his decision to come back. I think it was pretty evident that it was going to be a major risk for him sliding into the second round if he decided to go into the draft. It's not to say that he definitely would have gone in the second round. He could have had really good camps and maybe moved up the board, but it wasn't the certainty that he was looking for when, before his injury, they were saying he was a lottery to mid first round pick. So from a strictly basketball sense, and that's what it sounds like this decision was, I think it was a good choice.
Yeah, especially because this draft all of a sudden is loaded with 6'6" wing type guys. I mean, D'Angelo Russell just entered the draft. You have Stanley Johnson. You've got the Harrisons.
Well, Russell's a point guard. Come on.
Yeah, right. And one of the Harrisons is a point guard. Too. So you have all these guys who are probably ahead of him in the pecking order who are in this draft. There's an international guy who's going to go in the lottery. And given the fact that he can't prove himself against these guys, or at least doesn't have total faith that he's going to be able to do that at Portsmouth and that kind of thing, it does seem like this is the right move for him. But more importantly, it's a nice thing for Michigan.
No doubt.
to finally get one of their guys back when there's like a questionable decision to be made. So
hopefully it's as impactful as when Trey made.
That would be nice. Right. That would be nice. Yeah. A Naismith winner. That would be nice.
Yeah. That was still to this day the biggest recruit that Michigan has landed in John Beilein's tenure, was getting Trey Burke to come back for a senior year, followed closely by Mitch McGarry. I think that was the second. Most impactful.
So that means Jalen Brown's coming? Is that what you're saying, Sam?
I'm saying
gut feeling.
Gut feeling.
I didn't say that.
No.
But
he's much.
Do I have a gut feeling that they're in his top two? Yes.
Who is the other team in that top two?
I do not have a gut feeling about who they're going to get. You know, depending on who you talk to, it's a different team. So yeah. Being Cardi said Cal, right?
Yeah.
Ryan Snow still says Kentucky. I've heard both UCLA and Kansas, but the consistent team in this mix is Michigan. Everyone is saying Michigan being one of the top two teams on.
You know,
the last time
we bugged him about a gut feeling about Jalen Brown, he was much more vociferous in opposing it. I feel that he's coming around.
And it makes sense. I mean,
I am not going to lack vociferousness when it comes to saying I do not have a gut feeling about what he's going to do.
Right.
Only that Michigan, I have a gut feeling Michigan is in his top two. I do.
And it's a good fit for him because the guy has every aspect of his game down except for one small detail, which is shooting the basketball.
But he is so much better. He is so much better than he was.
You at least
have to respect him as a jump shooter. Now, I may not have looked like it in the McDonald's game, but
But you can kind of tell with the form, it's a little shaky and some of the foul. I think he missed four foul shots in a row at some point in that game.
And see, but this is the same guy that with half a second left in the state title game, nailed two free throws to win the state title. So, you know, he's a guy that aside from the skill level that he brings to the table, which is he is a dynamic slasher. He is a high-flying finisher. He now has a jump shot that you have to respect, so it makes him that much more effective putting it on the floor. But put all of that to the side for a moment, an even bigger piece to the puzzle that he might bring to this team, and this guy has so much dog in his game. That's when I look at Michigan's roster right now, I see a lot of skill, but I'm looking for that piece, that mental piece that Trey Burke brought to the table, mental piece.
Sure.
And Jalen Brown gives you that. That's why I'm so convinced that if they get him, that if they get Jalen Brown, they are going to Houston. If they don't, they'll still be a second weekend team in the NCAA. They'll contend in the Big Ten for the Big Ten title. They'll go at least to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, at least. I'm not saying they couldn't go farther, but if they get Brown, dude, book your ticket to Houston. It's mark it down. I know you can put some analytics on it, I'm sure. Book it. It's happening. They're going.
But as far as the mental piece.
Sam said that, he was right.
Well, no, but as far as the mental piece, though, like don't you feel like Derek Walton, the healthy Derek Walton, could give you that, too?
I'm not saying that that's not possible. I'm just saying that I feel a lot stronger about them being there with him than I do with Jalen than I do without him.
Right.
I'm not saying that, look, I'm not going to put a ceiling on this team and say they can't make it with what they have coming back, because they're going to be a really deep team. They got a lot of talent on the wing. Saw a lot of young guys grew up last year. I'm curious how the minutes thing is going to work out, guys. We did that exercise before.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It was off air, wasn't it?
It was off air.
We've done it on air as well.
Nine-man rotation still leaves some guys that, came.
Platoon system. We've seen how that works.
I'm not a believer in this at all.
I don't know that they're going to go to a platoon system, but I think they're going to have at least a nine-man rotation, Craig.
I think nine is too deep. I think Beilein thinks nine is too deep. I know he's walking that back. He's walking that back a bit, but I am not a believer in nine-man rotations. I'd rather go with six than nine.
Six.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at teams, teams have a better history of short bench or doing closer to their. You're closer to your capacity to play at six than you are at nine. I like seven, eight, seven and a half, eight.
I can't think that that's true.
Like, the reason why, in my opinion, Kentucky underachieved, I know they won all their games, but
they
won
didn't
this
underachieve.
Year. They really did.
They
that
went
was
up
not,
against
that
historically
was not
great Wisconsin
a,
team.
That was not as good
they
a team as it should have been.
Oh, my God.
And they it was not as good a team as it should have been because that wasn't even a team. I mean, it was a bunch of guys, that, you know, and
they, yeah, that, you know, that's about that's not
they,
a they Calipari.
It was
yeah.
that's exactly
yeah,
right.
that's not
they
a problem.
That
it
game.
Was both.
They lost
it
that game
both.
Because of poor.
I'm not
coaching.
Talking about that game. If you looked at Kentucky at the end of the year, that was a team that went nowhere
they
over
didn't,
the course.
That's
of
coaching.
Game. I know, but they weren't playing the well. It's how
coaching.
You play.
But they
that's
won.
Coaching.
I know they won.
Wait, how many did they beat West Virginia by?
They won by a bit.
I mean,
70. I don't know.
I'm sure.
I still.
You know what? Calipari is to blame for not making sure in the final few minutes of that contest that they had an offensive plan. That you go, Carl Towns is having a day.
Right.
Get the ball to him. And here you have, but, what, 2-3 shot clock violations down the stretch?
Because yep.
you're trying to take the air out of the ball? What kind of crap?
Well, that's but his all, offense.
I'm not going to argue his, that wait, Calipari is terrible because he's a
but
terrible
Sam,
coach.
And,
and their entire defensive strategy is switching on Kaminsky. When you can't switch a 6'6" guy on Frank Kaminsky. I know you could do it to everybody else in the country, but Kaminsky has the skill and the size to take advantage of whoever they put up against him. So you need Towns or you need one of your other 8-7-footers. On constantly, and they—I mean—they could have won that game, except Calipari is not as good of a coach as Bo Ryan is, flat out.
Yeah, that's
well, they yep. lost that game because Travion Jackson did not commit.
Big light in
the
sky
half.
Raises an east.
They're going to be better next year because they don't have to deal with Travion Jackson.
Yeah. Well, I think that. I mean, I think
well,
Wisconsin.
I think
Wisconsin
might be.
Wisconsin's going to be good loss. Next year again. I mean, people who think they're going away are. You
they
know,
won't
are
be
not.
As
I mean,
good
when have they been?
They might be pretty close.
Bad in the last. Yeah.
They've been in the top four of the Big Ten for like over a decade.
They won't be as good next year, though. They
no,
won't be.
Right?
No.
That's what you guys said about Michigan State this year. They ain't no good.
They weren't as good.
Like they got
and they got a great draw.
They got a cake draw and they took advantage of it. And congratulations to them. But they were a 7 seed for a reason. Well, I mean, they lost to Texas Southern. That's not, I mean.
9:40 yeah, on a Thursday. Love this hour. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side. Fight like kids. Got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider. Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the official voice of University. I got to show Craig Ross this tweet. What's late, that? Great Bernie Mac. So, at Hall09 Hassan. He said, UK underachiever, 6-man rotation, what? And then he posted a picture of the late, great Bernie Mac. With an incredulous look on his face. Like, what the hell is this guy talking about? That's Craig Ross's point, calling UK underachievers. It wasn't because that they had this long rotation, Craig. I think they did underachieve from a winning the championship standpoint, obviously, because of their coach.
Well, I think coach was relevant. I think if they would have decided at some point we're going with 8 guys and here's our rotation, that would have been a much better team. Even Michigan last year, after they had their injuries, they were a better team at the end of the year by a long shot than they were in December.
Well,
they were a much better team. And that was a top 40 team at the end of the year. They were playing like a top 40 team.
Well,
in December, they weren't even close.
Well, that you had the growth, the maturation of some young players.
Because they got a chance to get minutes,
but
because your bench was shorter.
No, well, I don't know about that. But, I mean, I feel like guys like Spike and Zach started playing like a John Beilein team and with beautiful offense and some efficiency, right? I think the bigger question is why didn't happen in December.
I mean, because it takes time. Because
but you had a lot of guys coming back from
but
the team last year. You had Karras there during that time, and they were D1 average in offense.
Right. Well,
you lost 3 NBA draft picks. There's another team in the state that lost 3 guys, two NBA draft picks, and a third guy that was a veteran. They lost to Texas Southern in December, but guess what? By March, where were they?
I mean, guys, guys don't just step into these new expanded roles. At least most guys don't. I know we've gotten spoiled. You see, all right. You're the guy, Nick, and Nick just boom, he's ready for it right away. That's not normal. And so when you see a guy take a little more time to Zach Irvin to adjust to having that added responsibility, we think, oh well, you know what's the deal here? Sometimes it just there was even more pressure on Zach because he didn't have wingmen out there. You mean Karras is hurt and Derek is hurt?
No, but before that.
Even before
I'm more concerned about what happened in December.
But look at Derek Walton's numbers for last year. he collapsed. He shot like 32% from inside the line. He shot about that from outside the line. You know, and I think a large part of that was the fact that he had an injury that he didn't know what to do with.
Right.
Like, could he play on it? Yeah, he could play on it. Could he play well on it? No. And that really throws you off, especially when you're adjusting to losing your alpha dog. And frankly, you had a lot more playing time for Chapman because you had no alternatives early in the year, and Chapman was not doing a whole lot with that time.
No.
And so once you, you know, have Dawkins out there and Dawkins is shooting 48% from three, things are going to look a lot better. just because
and
you're
I
getting...
don't, and I don't think they knew. I don't, you know, when they first were talking about Aubrey, remember the comparisons. They were comparing Aubrey to Glenn. Well, Aubrey is more Tim Hardaway than he is Glenn Robinson.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So it was there are these things that you find out through experience. And that's what I that's how I see last year. That so, they got better with experience.
Sam, how did everyone kind of miss on Aubrey Dawkins?
We talk about this on our podcast like every week. We have our like how did nobody offer Aubrey Dawkins
Yeah, what's your take?
Yeah,
I have no idea. It makes no sense. Like, Iowa should have been all over that kid. Every mid-level Big Ten team should have been like, this is Aubrey Dawkins' son. He's 6 foot six. He can jump out of the gym. Offer.
Because he went prep after high school. He wasn't this dynamic all-everything scorer while he was there. So, I mean, yeah, some teams missed. He would have wound up being one of those guys at Dayton that you're looking at right now. He's like, well, how did Dayton get this guy? You know, Dayton has been really good finding guys like that.
Isn't that strange, though, for the son of such a high-profile coach, though?
Seriously.
It might have been in part that people were assuming he was going to Stanford. Is that a possibility?
I mean, maybe.
It seems to me that maybe everyone just assumed he was going to go play for his dad.
That was my assumption. It was pretty evident in his once you talked to him that wasn't going to happen.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe they just didn't check because of that. And that's an interesting question. And this one, you know, we'll talk to him. That's an interesting story angle. We've talked to him about it a little bit, not a ton. But hell, he has really developed greater consistency on his jump shot since he's been at Michigan.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. He'll tell you that he wasn't shooting it like this, even in his prep school.
Well, didn't you mention that earlier in the year they didn't think they could play him much because his release was so slow, and then they worked on that.
You know, I don't recall mentioning that, but you know, it was one of those things where he wasn't consistent. He certainly wasn't consistent with his. With his shot, and he got a lot more consistent. But he was the guy when we watched in the summer and talking to the coaches. I mean, he's in this, all the guys in this class, there are a lot of guys, and Cam Chapman is ranked higher. You know, DJ Wilson, there are a lot of raves about he moved into the top 100. The guy in this class is Aubrey Dawkins, and you can see the, you know, the athleticism, the creativity, the ability to finish over people. If he could just add the jump shot piece, because that would make his off the dribble game that much better, he was going to be a guy. And we saw him. Yeah. I didn't predict that he'd be able to shoot it this well. I mean,
Well, when they went on that trip last year, he shot it on the summer trip. I mean, right from the beginning, he was making shots.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. And I don't think they did, because the comparisons they were given were Glenn Robinson, and this guy is not going to be Glenn Robinson.
And he has a little brother too, right?
Who, Aubrey?
I think so.
You know that? I don't know. You got me on that one.
College coaches should find out.
Let's go to the phone. Talk to Howard in Ann Arbor. Howard, what's up?
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing?
Good, good. You know what? How is this whole thing going to look once we get Jaylen Brown or Kenny Williams? Because I think we're going to get one of those guys. How do you think the chemistry, the playing time, the fight for minutes, how do you think all this is going to work its way out?
That's the issue. I mean, that's why the season will be both fun, fascinating, perhaps frustrating, but it is the issue. Now, it may sort itself out pretty, you know, early on. I mean, we don't know, first of all, if Mo Wagner will even be here. Right. That's not 100%.
He still has to pass the, I can't remember, TOEFL.
TOEFL.
Yeah. He has to pass that.
And that's number one. Number two is, you know, how good is he going to be? Three is, you know, how does Duncan Robinson fit in? How good of a player is he? I think he can shoot it. We know he's 6'8", but nobody's ever made a D3 to D1 jump that I've ever heard of. And so you've got all kinds of questions. I mean, what you do know is Spike, Walton, Karras, Dawkins, and Irvin, you know, can play at this level and play well. So, but then you've got a lot of other questions.
I think if you get one of those guys, you're in a situation where no one on the team has to play over 30 minutes. And you can play a 9-man rotation and keep everyone fresh, have good chemistry on the floor. And you know, the biggest problem is, you know, the guys that don't play consistently, how will they handle it mentally? You know, just not getting regular minutes. That's you got some guys that are just frankly going to be the odd man out already, but certainly if you get a Jaylen Brown especially.
Yeah, you know, I think a couple of guys will handle it fine. Like, I think if Rock drops out of the rotation this year, he'll be fine with it. Because we saw him come in to a game at the Breslin where everybody's like, who's this guy? And he scores 18 points. I think he just kind of has that mentality where he's going to go hard and practice every day. You know, he's probably grateful to Michigan for the opportunity. And if he has to cool his heels for a year to wait for Karras and Spike to clear out, you know, I think he's going to be okay with that.
Does it make sense, given that, to perhaps redshirt? I mean, he's older. Some of these guys? Might it make sense to redshirt him, or does that just
I think if you're Cam Chapman, you'd have to look at it. It'd be reasonable to look at that.
Yeah, I think he needs to remake his game. I think he needs to think power forward.
I mean, that's what I think. And, you know, you put some weight on him, and he's 6'8", and it could happen. Exactly. But I think he just needs to have a consistent corner three. Like, that is the biggest thing that he needs in his game, because when he puts the ball on the floor, you can see the skill that made him a top 50 player. It's just that right now, if he's getting the tum-tum Nairn treatment, it's really tough to get past the guy.
Yeah, I think it'll make sense for Mo Wagner, depending on how things work out with him, to be thinking and talking.
Coach in Germany is talking about him as a two and done, and I'm like...
don't you think some of this is going to sort itself out just based on some quality of play and how these guys perform?
This is all total speculation right now. Hey, if Mo Wagner comes in and is dominating everyone in the paint at 205, or, you know, by the time they get to the season, he's at least 215, maybe 220. If he's not, then you play him.
Right.
Then you play him. But the point is they don't have to look at it right now and say, oh, we got to play this guy.
Yeah.
Right. We don't have anyone else.
Exactly. Like, if Rock regresses a little bit, he's going to end up on the bench. Duncan Robinson is the shooter that we think he is, then he's going to play. And, you know, I think we thought Denal was going to be a pretty good shooter, and that didn't quite work itself out this season.
I mean, he was all right. He just didn't take advantage of that pick and pop aspect. And then defensively, he was clearly behind a couple other guys on the roster. And I don't know if that's going to change.
That's another guy. I mean, this is a big, you know, as far as being in the rotation, this is a big offseason for him, getting stronger, getting better on both ends of the floor, to your point, Brian. Going to be interested to see how he comes back next year. But the competition is what it's supposed to do is make everyone.
Yeah.
Raise their game up a notch.
It isn't even clear that Bielefeld's gone.
Yes, it is.
I don't think it's 100%. He could walk on.
I don't know. He ruled that out.
He did rule that out?
He ruled that out.
I thought he was our best center.
Kansas State is hot on his trail.
Kansas State is.
Kansas State.
I don't blame him. Kansas State
is hot on his trail. He's getting high major looks.
Okay.
He's getting high major looks. And here's what I wouldn't be surprised by, because you know about the, what is it? Ira, is it the Bielefeld Library?
Yes.
In Illinois.
That is correct.
The Bielefeld Library in Illinois. Well, Michigan just set a precedent that might pave the way for Max to do a whole, you know, intra Big Ten kind of thing with Rudock coming over from Iowa.
Yeah.
And so now if you're Max Bielefeld, you can say, hey.
Oh, Max has got to understand Bruce Weber's a better coach than John Grosch over there.
He can find a place that's going to play a 6'7" guy in the post.
Right. I think you really underestimate Max Bielefeld.
I know.
I got to throw that out there. He was good this year.
He was our best center.
That's not accurate.
That is accurate.
Like, I mean, he's – I mean, I thought he was good for who he was, but he provides absolutely no presence when it comes to shot blocking, or even
Wesley Unseld did.
Like, when he was in there, he just got targeted immediately and over again in a way that, like, when Doyle was able to, like, when he had the juice, the ability to stay on the floor, like, the defense in the post was so much better with Doyle on the floor.
Yeah, but Doyle was also the worst rebounder on the team. Worst defensive rebounder.
Other teams aren't going to play.
I mean, I love Doyle,
but
if they play him at the four, I can see that. Yeah.
Which I'm surprised that he didn't get more time at the four, given his skill set.
The four for Michigan is different from the four for.
Yeah, they don't even call. I mean, yeah, they don't even call it that. Right and left, they call it.
Yeah. So. At any rate.
We didn't even get to talk about Austin Davis. I wanted to talk about Austin Davis.
Next week. Talk about big country, as they call them. That'll do it for today's show. Up next is the Tiki and Tierney Show, followed by the Jim Rome Show at noon. Midday Tigers action. Tigers look to salvage a split with the Yankees. Our coverage picks up at 12:40, followed by the huge show, 6:40, Red Wings versus the Lightning. Can they do it, folks? We'll see. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, Ann Arbor, Accumulus.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!